Okay, this takes me back to the spaghetti dinner at Sequoia Elementary School in 1968.
Positive thing?
It is.
Okay.
Because somebody's mom made garlic bread and I'd never had it before and I thought it was amazing.
Because it is.
Hello and welcome back to Sip with Nikki. I'm Nikki Lamberti here in Sonoma County, California, and once again, thrilled to have you as a listener, whether you're a first time or a long time. So happy that you have joined our Sip community, and I cannot wait for you to hear what I've got in store this week. Now, if you haven't already listened to the re-release of our olive oil deep dive with Liz Tagami, I'm going to encourage you to go back to that just a couple months ago this year, which was actually a re-release of two different episodes last year, Olive Oil 101 and Olive Oil 102, because Liz has a lot to teach us. She and her husband Donald own American Olive Farmer and also the Lucero olive oil brand, and they're up in Corning, California, which is just a couple hours north of me here in Northern California. And if those names sound familiar, you've probably heard that American Olive Farmer is one of the sponsors of the podcast, and I shout out how much I love their products in some weekly ads. So you can imagine, if I love them as much as I do, that I was really excited when Liz let me know that something that they have not had in their portfolio for quite some time, it's been sold out, was back again, and I had never tasted it, and that is their flavored olive oils and also two of their beautiful balsamic vinegars that they import from Modena in Italy. So what you'll hear today is me tasting for the very first time their lemon and basil and garlic olive oils, three different oils, which were all new to me. But more importantly, Liz catches us up onto the process of how these are made and how hers are very different than other flavored oils that are out there on the market that have other ingredients and additives and flavorings, whereas these are made with literally just the olives and the fresh ingredient of either lemon or basil or garlic. Can't wait for you to sip with us in this week's extra special Sip Spotlight.
Sip Spotlight.
So here we go with Liz Tagami and what's new at American Olive Farmer.
Thank you for making time to hop on another recording with me and talk about these gorgeous new flavored oils and two vinegars that arrived on my doorstep. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure to be here.
I'm curious, in the olive growing season, and I've been seeing some fun updates in your newsletters, all the things that are going on right now in the world of olive oil. What did your day look like up until you sat down here with me today?
It's a wonderful day. I always start out with a walk through the surrounding orchards. And although we don't have the olive crop right outside of my door, we do have other permanent crops. So I walk past the 8,000 almond trees across the road and prune trees. And so I'm looking at how the crop is sizing. They come into bloom and start setting fruit earlier than olives. And there are two other indicators. I have a neighbor with a wild olive tree I walk past, and I have two trees out by my gate. So I'm also looking at how those things are blooming and sizing.
Are they like little barometers that are a little bit closer to
your door? They really
are,
because they really are, because I don't have to get in a car and check on a crop a mile and a half away. We're now in a period of fruit set where some of the varieties have a heavy crop load this year, and a few of them were very sadly lacking.
Okay.
And it's just so much the particular circumstance, whether it's the microclimate or those trees, because they're alternate bearing. Table olives are in our county based on how the trees are shaped. They're tall trees where you must use orchard ladders. It's all hand harvest. Mm-hmm. And that means migrant farm labor. So the nail biter for everyone right now is, oh, how will the labor situation, which has always been tight, how
Who's
will it be
pick those olives?
Next? Our world going to be like in September? So yes, one of the two table olive crops is light. The other one is super abundant. So it could just be asking some people to try something different. And I'm not the cannery. The olive cannery takes thousands of tons of olives, and I take hundreds of pounds of olives, a big difference. So I'm going to get in there early and make sure my customers get the olives they need. And the good news is with a smaller crop, the size is usually bigger. The trees are more generous. There is something that we call June drop. And I don't know if grape growers say that, but after flowering and the olives start to form and size in June, the trees decide if they can handle that crop load, and they'll drop a certain amount. So no one does a tonnage forecast really until July. And that's when the first forecast comes in, and the weather in July and August is the sizing period. That's when we make sure that they're getting enough water. For table olives, just keep the water on them, keep sizing, and get them in early September. For oil olives, we're relying on fairly moderate temperatures on a relative basis, right? Because it's still a desert plant. But if it gets too hot, the olives will color, but they won't produce as much oil. So you could year over year have the exact same tonnage, but not enjoy the same yield. Varies by time of harvest, later or early, and the variety. Some olive varieties are just very stingy, but they're good for table olives.
To go back to your question about the vineyard, and you talked about the June drop, I think the biggest difference is it sounds like your olive trees are dropping olives on their own.
Yes.
And
they self-edit.
We edit. So the vineyard manager, the vintner, the winery team, they go out and thin fruit and drop it on purpose. But that has to be encouraged, and you have to actually do that. And that's because more isn't always better, and you don't want all of the competition. So we will drop fruit or thin fruit out, but the human has to do that in wine. So I think that's an interesting concept, but a different execution. Oh my gosh, I have so many questions about the beautiful flavored oils that we're going to taste today and the vinegars. Again, I can't reiterate enough, if you are listening to this episode and you have not listened to last year's Olive Oil 101, 102, or the re-release where I gave you the cliff notes from both of them, the encore presentation earlier this year, I really do encourage listeners to go back, pause this, we'll be here, and listen to that first to get the foundation, not only of who Liz and Donald are, an American olive farmer, and the history with Lucero, but then also how they are growing and producing these beautiful oils like Arbequina and Ascolano and the Oleo Novello, which I've talked about, are available at different times of the year. But since you and I have been working together, I think you have not had these for quite some time. So this is very exciting that we're back in stock. So I would love to know, why are they hard to keep? And also, of course, the process to make them what they are.
Thank you for the opportunity to share this real special category. And when we were chatting earlier about this and thinking about how to do the tasting, it occurred to me that in all of my professional tasting, whether it's taste panels or judging or even masterclasses, we don't taste flavored oils. And that's because they're not considered extra virgin. Strictly speaking, based on European regulations and even California regulations, if you add anything besides olives when you're crushing them, you have, and I'm using air quotes here, you've adulterated the batch, right? So if you start adding lemons, then it's not extra virgin. It's virgin olive oil with lemons. Or as I say in the ingredient statement, the ingredients are extra virgin olive oil because there's nothing else there but, right, the olives and then the other fruit. So in tasting this with you, we're going to use standard tasting glasses and we'll talk about aroma, flavor, and finish as we have in the past. But as I was setting this up, it gave me pause because this is a first. And I'd like to spend a minute and talk about why it's controversial.
Why
it's a polarizing subject. Really, when we talk about olives having a relatively low yield, why would you then do something that limits your flexibility later, right? As a staple in the pantry, if you go back to olive growing areas in Europe, why in the world would you do anything but make sure you had your basics, right? If you are in an abundant place like Sicily that has amazing citrus, the idea of at the very end of the season, you're getting ready to close down the mill and you've got some very ripe olives, someone in the mists of time said, hey, you know, what if we throw some lemons in or some local unique citrus and co-mill them? Because all of the citrus fruits have a little bit of oil in their skin. The juice doesn't matter, the pith doesn't matter, but expressing that oil in the zest, which is very little oil, but it's enough to add a flavored aroma to the resulting oil. And the word that is used is agrumato. Agrumato is olive oil in this style. Agrumi means citrus, right? Okay. So it's just an agrumato oil. Isn't a flavored oil. It's a flavored citrus oil, particularly. Okay. It has become more popular. Then let's turn to the United States. What do we do here? Culturally, we like things quick and easy.
We process and create artificial versions of all of the things that exist in nature.
There's a lot of people on who are your listeners, I'm sure, who are in the food industry, and you've seen something called Womp with other natural flavor. So there's a range.
With Womp? Other natural flavor. Womp. Right?
Yes. And so if you're a food technologist or in quality assurance or in product development, a lot of times the answer is, oh, you know what? We need some Womp. We need some caramel. Mm. We need some vanilla. We need something else because real vanilla is too expensive. So let's get some Womp in there. And that's all throughout commercial food production. So in the United States of America, you see a range from people doing an agrumato style citrus or the South American or Northern Italian kind of herbs, all the way to Womp, all the way to, I don't know what this is, but it's supposed to be lemon.
Or there's 97 ingredients in it.
Or sadly, you walk into some places and they have butter flavor. And if your extra virgin olive oil tastes like butter, it's got a lactic issue, and it's a defect.
Save that for your Chardonnay, Linda.
Something, right? And so I will have patrons on the phone. We'll be chatting about what we like, how we cook, what we enjoy. And from time to time, they'll say, I really don't like flavored oil. Probably because they walked into a mall somewhere and someone poured a fakey type real lemon flavor.
L-E-M-Y-N, lemon.
Yeah, something. So what we are tasting today is high end. And I guess I want to backtrack one more time in terms of why I didn't have these and what makes them unique. When I was operating production at Lucero, we in fact had 100% agrumato oils. And there was a legacy from before I got there of some with other natural flavoring. And one of my accomplishments is I located a global fragrance and flavoring company that had a patent on chirally correct natural flavors. And of all of the natural flavors offered out there, these seemed the most real in the mouth.
Okay.
So was it real lemon? Yeah, but they, like, it still comes in a bottle, right? We would purchase this stuff for several of the items in the collection. Why don't I do that today? I really feel strongly about only using real product, number one. But number two, even if I wanted to, the minimum order quantities are quite high and the shelf life is quite short. So if you're looking to even do that, you're talking about massive scale of production.
Yeah.
Right? It's just not somebody who's an artisan producer.
And you are, in fact, the epitome of the artisan producer.
I'm one of several, probably over 1,000 small operators in the state of California. And the reason I didn't have flavored oil is if you think about a limited crop and the timing and having to race against rain in California to have mill time, available fruit and everything else to get a flavored oil done, there's no bottomless tank where I operate. So sure. I had to make some choices and I chose to not compromise and get back in stock when I got in stock. I also had the complication of having my glass maker discontinue the size. So there was an opportunity to just roll out everything at one time, drop a season, come back and say, we're very proud of the collection, which is a lemon, an assorted lemon, not just one variety, a Genovese basil, which is the same variety that's used in making pesto. It's very common in the greengrocers. And then rather than just a garlic, this garlic has been roasted and then put into the mill. And it's all using late harvest fruit instead of at the end of the season. because you really don't want to mill garlic and then do a regular batch. It's the last thing that is done. So there it is.
Not only did you answer my question, but I think it really helps people understand the limited nature of what these are, how special they are. And yeah, just even you probably saw me roll my eyes when you talked about your glass issues, because we're dealing with some similar things in getting ready to bottle our next vintage of wine. So yeah, all those things lead you to have to make some decisions. I'm thrilled that we have these, and let's taste some lemon to start. I'm so excited. Wonderful. Tell me what to do.
All right. Well, as we chat, I have my glass in my left hand to just stay warm. And I'll share with you that when we first offered an Agrumado style lemon, it was 100% Meyer. Meyer lemon has just an incredible quality about it. And it's a hybrid fruit that was Eureka lemons and a tangerine. And so there's a like a little oranginess to it. It was a man named Meyer who did it in Southern California, if I'm remembering my story correctly.
I don't think I know the origin of Meyer lemons. I just love them, and I love how intense and floral and interesting they are.
If you hold a Meyer lemon and compare it to another kind of lemon, you'll notice that it's got an extremely thin skin. I use the word stingy. We're talking about some olive varieties. This is the stingiest lemon in terms of what you get out of it. The number of pounds of Meyer lemons that you'd have to do a batch is insane. We began experimenting, and I have to credit the master miller at Lucero for doing this. He started looking at the bill of materials and says, this is crazy, Tagami. How many lemons we're putting in this? What if we just switched to Eureka? And I said, no way. We're not doing that. Different flavor profile. Don't want to do it. So we compromised, and we did batches of both and then blended to suitability and established in 2016 our unique Lucero flavor profile of the lemon, because it wasn't just one or the other, but it was what we felt gave us all the aroma and all of the flavor, but also was smart, and it wasn't going to be $80 a bottle or something stupid.
Which is just as important. You can make all these decisions of the ideal flavor profile. I think same for a wine too. And then in the end, if your cost to produce it is not accessible for most people, it's not a win.
Yeah, it becomes a vanity project at that point. And I'll say—
Another right? good term, hashtag vanity project. I just smelled it. I had to smell it.
I know, I did, and I joined
glass.
You.
I have not tasted these ever. This is your—
Have you not?
Okay, listener, well then, you're hearing this live for the first time.
So I've not done strapaggio, I don't think, with a lemon, but let's see.
Would you not do it?
Well, I don't know that. Again, this isn't a competition oil. I've only done it for pleasure. I don't know how much it's going to catch in your throat. For instance, you would not do strapaggio with vinegar, or you wouldn't stop coughing, right?
You would die.
So, but for the lemon, it may have a little of that. So let's do a light strapaggio.
Okay.
Oh yeah, not so bad. I'm trying to keep my mic away so I don't slurp too loudly.
We can slurp. I just had this visual of myself like melting in my chair and slithering off the chair.
So you'll notice that the olive really recedes in this. It's not fruit forward. What's really forward here is the lemon. The olive, but it's not a flavorless fat either. It just melts really nicely. And the reason for that is that it is a late harvest olive. Typically, what we can get when these are co-milled and we can in January is a very ripe fruit. And that's where they're going to be more buttery, much more mild, delicate, and the intensity is way down. So I still have the flavor in my mouth. The finish is very long because of that zest.
You were talking about just the zest, which holds the oil that gives the aromatics. There's no lemon juice or pulp or flesh of the lemon in here. It's just from the zest.
And maybe some flavor comes from that. But you remember from Olive 101 that after the fruit is crushed and separated in a decanter, right, a high-speed salad spinner that goes at 3,000 RPM, the flesh and water are separated. And in this case, the juice would as well. What our experience is that something about you're adding a lot of extra liquid with the lemon juice, right? That is going to reduce some yields. You're not going to get as much oil out of the olive itself. But because you've crushed the outside so thoroughly and mixed it in, the oils coalesce in the malaxer. That's all you need. And recall, I don't have my own mill anymore. I rely on friends. Ideally, I would have a couple of prep cooks there, cutting lemons, juicing them to make lemon curd afterwards.
And then just everything, get everything you can
everything
out of it.
Because otherwise, right? And then just throwing the shell of the lemon in. But as it is, the entire uncut lemon is thrown in and the hammer mill takes care of everything.
Okay.
Because of the amount of Meyer in here, you get a little bit of the oranginess.
Definitely.
A little bit, and not just straight lemon. And classically, it's enjoyed on fish. It's wonderful on asparagus.
That I am having for dinner tonight, the beautiful Copper River salmon from my friend Sina, the Alaskan salmon. And I think I'm just going to drizzle it with this and just do it simple.
It works so well.
Beautiful fish, beautiful oil, and just let it shine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, our friends have popularized something that olive people have been doing for decades, which is enjoying oil on ice cream.
Oh,
and so lemon olive oil on vanilla ice cream is outstanding.
Yeah.
But not just ice cream. I had yogurt this morning, a really nice Greek yogurt with some very robust honey and the lemon olive oil, some seeds and nuts. And it was just really wonderful because it just emulsifies that those two oils, the dairy fat and the other one, or cottage cheese, or, you know, think about some of these other ways you might use it. Popular on a dessert, you have a pound cake and just drizzle a little bit on that.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You just get a little flavor, whip it into whipped cream. So, you know, you can have fun with it. It is the single most popular flavored oil because of its versatility, both with sweet and savory applications.
What about olive oil cake? Would you make like your beautiful recipes that you've shared for olive oil cake and then substitute regular oil with lemon?
You could. It'd be expensive, but it's been done.
Maybe and, just do a drizzle on the top.
That may be more responsible.
I love that.
I never want to say
I never said I was responsible or fruitful.
Well, and it kind of goes to, okay, this is a good transition to the basil because I will now confess one of the things that I do, and that is that I liberally pour the basil over popcorn.
Yes.
And use Parmesan because giant, like an unspeakably large bowl of freshly popped popcorn.
It has to be unspeakably large. That's how you make popcorn when you're going to make popcorn.
It has to fit like with your arms in ballet first position, like holding the bowl and just, that's one of my few vices that I'll confess. Mm. I love a big bowl of popcorn.
Me too.
Especially on a Friday afternoon, now that I think about it. Well, you're having your salmon. I'm going to go. Don's got some very nice Reggiano in the fridge door. I might do something with that.
Your chef husband has that, of course.
Thoughts to share?
You might come back to this, but an obvious use of the lemon oil, I think, would be in a salad dressing, like a vinaigrette. We're going to come back to that when we talk about vinegar.
You know, I've poured a finger in my special glass of the rosé.
This is so beautiful, rosato.
We say rosato in Italian, and the grape variety is Pinot Noir, as they say in Italy, Pinot Nero.
I love this so much.
You're a grapey person, color, and there's a little bit of tawniness to it, pink next to a regular. So what do you get?
Ooh, I'm smelling it out of a little, almost like a cordial glass, and I'm swirling it and smelling it like a wine because it's like wine's cousin.
We will be right back. If you heard our 69th episode from April 2025, you heard my amazing conversation with Sina Wheeler. Sina is from a fifth-generation fishing family, and she and her husband Rich founded Sina Sea, and he catches wild, sustainably caught fish in Alaska, and then they cut it and package it and ship it to your door, and it's premium sushi quality when it arrives. You can create a subscription box, and they'll even guide you as to what's in season. For instance, May is the start of Copper River salmon season. In our episode, you heard Sina and I tasting this very salmon, which was delicious. And we made poke bowls and paired it with wine, of course. And I was really blown away, not only at the awesome quality of the fish, but the sustainability of the packaging when it arrived. And then the recipe card that was packed inside the box and how easy it was to prepare. So I'm so excited to introduce you to Sina Sea, so that you can have it shipped right to your door from a small family-owned business. They've been kind enough to create a discount code for our listeners. The code is SIPANDSEA, and you can use that at their website, senasea.com, senasea.com for 10% off your order. This can be for a one-time purchase, or you can sign up and save with a subscription box. I also encourage you to sign up for their email list for great recipes and inspirations of how to incorporate healthy and beautiful fish into your diet regularly. They do a monthly drawing for a $50 gift card for all the members on their mailing list. So go check out the delicious wild Alaskan fish at senasea.com. Healthy fish delivered easy. Smoky balsamic glazed ribs. What? Did I get your attention? So AmericanOliveFarmer.com is a business and a website owned and operated by my friend Liz Tagami. She and her husband Donald live in Corning, California, and I recently had Liz on the podcast, and we got to taste some of her beautiful olive oils that are made right here in California, both Arbequina and Ascolano. Well, that was just the tip of the iceberg, because if you check out her website, she imports gorgeous balsamic vinegar from Modena. One of them uses three of my favorite Italian wine grapes as the base of the vinegar. Trebbiano, Lambrusco, and Sangiovese. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? And while on their website, if you sign up to stay in touch, you'll receive their newsletter and you'll get the delicious recipes that Liz and Donald have created using their awesome products. I'm so excited to introduce all of you to American Olive Farmer, and Liz has kindly created a discount code for our listeners. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI, capital S, capital W, and capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, for $10 off your order, and that can be from anything off the site, whether it's delicious oils or vinegars. She has gifts. You can even send someone an olive tree as a really unique gift. How cool is that? Check out AmericanOliveFarmer.com and support this fantastic, small, California-based, woman-led business. You can even set up an olive oil subscription. Go check it out. You're welcome. And now, back to the show.
Ooh, I just love the acidity of vinegar, right? It makes my mouth water when I smell it. But I smell fruit. I smell, It's a fruity, pretty vinegar that I can't wait to put in my mouth just from the smell. I don't know how else to describe it.
Let's just taste it and don't strapaggio, because you won't stop coughing.
Oh my gosh. It's almost like there's some sweetness in there. Is there a little bit of sweetness?
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
There is sweetness. Yeah. The grams per serving, 10 grams per. You think about most of the rosé vinegars in the market are made with Trebbiano.
Yeah.
And it's a green-skinned olive, too, so they must be adding something else to get a rosé color. But Pinot Noir is a very interesting grape. And so more interesting grapes will make more interesting vinegar.
And wine, you know? Usually, yeah.
And wine, usually. One of the conversations I have very frequently with people, when we talk about balsamic vinegar, this is a specialty rosé, right? It's not thick, it's not viscous, it's very light and clean. This is the Sauvignon Blanc, maybe, the Sancerre of vinegars. So really nice for summertime. And I would say that when people ask the age of a vinegar, it's very much being caught up in American marketing. In Italy, they do not put 18-year vinegar on the big label in a watermark or 25-year.
Right.
They will talk about grades, but it has to be 6% acidity if it is a traditional balsamic vinegar. And when people start talking about age, I remind them a boring young vinegar aged for 10 years will be a boring old vinegar.
Good to know.
So you start off with interesting grapes, well prepared, and then aging, of course, will add complexity. But any kind of harmony or interest is going to come from getting good grapes, getting good juice to begin with. So much what you talk about every day. As you've enjoyed this, one of my favorite pairings is to put this with the lemon. It is a super popular summertime vinaigrette, spring and summer.
Would you do like a 1-to-1 ratio of the oil to vinegar?
Traditionally, a vinaigrette is 3-to-1 oil to 3 oil, 1 vinegar. Okay. But what the style is today, and we've adopted it really, is 2-to-1. One part vinegar, 2 parts oil.
So that's what you want me to do, is 2 vinegar to 1 oil.
Opposite.
Okay. All right. I think I've got that.
But, you know, do it to your own taste, right?
Okay. Oh my gosh, that vinegar is so interesting. All right, did you give it a swirl? Just combine it a little bit?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, right?
You can't see her face. Wine, like, bring me to tears and give me goosebumps. I don't know that I've ever had that reaction with oil and vinegar and like a basically a salad dressing that we just made, but it's giving me a moment. It's, wow.
Donald has a recipe that he developed that uses these two on a grilled fish.
Mm.
And I think he might have added some mustard and stuff too. I'd have to go look, but it really worked well.
It's like when we talk about like salt, fat, acid, heat, and you know how we want to check all the boxes with things. We don't really have heat here, but we definitely have acid and we definitely have some sweetness. And it's just every taste bud in my mouth when I take a sip of this combination is firing on all cylinders. Even though it's light and fresh, there are so many layers of flavors that are happening right now, and it is amazing. Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Now I might have to put that on my fish.
And again, that's why these are so popular.
When we're done recording, I'm going to come back and play with these. And okay. I'm interested to then try like a 1-to-1 or a 2-to-1 with oil to vinegar. But I love a little bit more of the vinegar with the oil in the background. That was fantastic. Oh my God. Okay. So we have fresh Genovese basil olive oil. Tell me about this.
There are many kinds of basil in the market, but the one you see most frequently is known in marketing as the Genovese basil, and it is the flavor of pesto.
One of my favorite flavors on the planet. Oh my gosh, it smells like I just picked this out of my garden.
It doesn't. It's like you just crushed it between your fingers, and I'm going to take a little taste. It's nice to do it this way. So.
It's almost like I'm looking for the basil leaves floating in here. That's how present it is and how true and authentically basil it is. I don't know, even know how else to say it. So tell me how we talked about how from the lemons, you're extracting it from the zest, which has some oil. What is the process of getting this much fresh basil into here?
It's just volume.
Yeah.
It has to be fresh. And the reason why these oils are more expensive is that it takes a lot to do that extraction. And I would say in terms of a shortcut, this really is a condiment. Right? This is something that
on my margarita pizza.
Let's add another layer of basil
on there. Right? Yeah.
And so maybe you add a chiffonade of basil, but then if you wanted a little bit something else, that to your point, a couple of dots on a soup so you get that green color and let a little gem of flavor there.
Oh my gosh. That just tastes like, I think basil is nostalgic for me because my parents always grew it just in pots in New Jersey, and we made pesto and we love margarita pizza. So between that and then recent trips to Italy, when I taste this, it's very nostalgic and comforting.
Wow. Very nice.
Yeah.
The third oil we're going to taste today is the garlic, the roasted garlic. And I did a little pre-taste before and I thought, oh, this is okay. Yes, it's roasted garlic. And then I started dipping bread in it and I said, it's garlic bread. I mean, Donald laughed. He goes, well, yeah.
That's how you make garlic bread. Slow roasted garlic.
It is a convenience item. It's where the people who love garlic and use a lot of garlic, they
I'm raising my hand
item.
To both of those things. That's me. Should I taste it in the glass first?
Yeah, go ahead and do that. And then I'm going to go right for the bread because I'm hungry.
Last time we did this, we had pizza. That was so fun.
Oh, that was so smart. Okay. This takes me back to the spaghetti dinner at Sequoia Elementary School in 1968.
Positive thing?
It is.
Okay.
Because somebody's mom made garlic bread and I'd never had it before. And I thought it was amazing.
Because it is. Ooh, that smells amazing. We often roast garlic. We have the little ceramic roaster. And on our pizza nights that we do every couple of weeks in the wood fire pizza oven, we roast the garlic in that wood oven. And it's amazing. And then we repurpose it for days.
Some wonderful versions of garlic oil on the market. Of course, there are the people who have the flavored stuff, which is not so great. But you could do this with raw garlic. Some people do a double garlic. It's stronger. I don't think we have to go overboard. I think this is just a really nice balance. And the roasting of it just lets the garlic, garlic can be very astringent or acrid, which I find unpleasant. Raw garlic typically,
Yeah, I know it's a turn off to some people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could bite into garlic like an apple and be happy.
Oh, really? You're a Ken Rose fan.
That's me. Stinking Rose is a garlic forward restaurant in San Francisco. Here's where my mind is already going with these. On said pizza nights that I mentioned, where we usually have friends over, and one of these days it's going to be you and Donald, I make a big charcuterie board with all different things, but I always have a little dipping bowl of my American Olive Farmer, usually Arbequina or Ascolano, and just some either flatbread or breadsticks or bread. I can't wait to do my next board where I have these three each in little dipping containers, and that's part of the charcuterie spread, and people could taste the difference in them.
That's very cool.
I can't wait. I'm taking another bite.
I think people like to explore. I went ahead and I created a trio, 15% off for buying the three assorted packs.
People can pick one of these and buy them. You have to buy the trio. Yes, they can buy just one as a single or a trio of the same. Three bottles of the same. I saw you have on your website as well. But I'm like, why would you not try all three and then maybe buy more of your favorites after that? Yeah.
Which then are on subscriptions. So you get a 15% discount on a trio of lemon and then an additional discount for like a quarterly subscription. And that's better for the environment and all of us. You'll save money on shipping and handling. I save money on shipping and handling.
Yep.
I'm trying to encourage more buying bundles, two or three at a time, because it's just enough. And you don't need to go crazy and buy too many at one time.
These aren't huge bottles. These are 250 mil. So yeah, I think that's very reasonable. And I would definitely encourage people to buy the trio for sure. Just to do what we're doing, to taste them all and then think about all the different ways to apply them. I want to remind people to go to your website, American Olive Farmer, not only to purchase and do the subscription and all of those things, but to look at the recipe section, because I'm going to guess are there some recipes in there that you and Donald have created that call for these specifically?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So you don't have to create it, person. They've already done it for you. Just find the recipes on their website because they're amazing. Speaking from experience, I've cooked multiple recipes from your website. Okay. Wow. I love that so much. That's going on pizza too. We have one more vinegar. First of all, your beautiful name, Tagami, is at the top. And then it says balsamic vinegar, aceto balsamico.
Oh, aceto balsamico.
Bene, bene.
Modenese. Si. This is the star of the show. I am so proud of this vinegar. I mentioned before that in Italy, they talk about grades. This is an affinato grade. And most vinegars that are available commercially in California, or I guess the United States, are not palatable to Americans. They're 6% acidity, which is the Modenese standard, but people want them sweeter. So what evolved is the major importer distributors started working with the larger producers in Modena to do a 4% acidity to meet the American palate, shall we say, right?
You had to dumb it down for us, for the Americans?
Well, every market, being in the confection business or anything else, you know, let's consider it sweet in Mexico or England versus California.
Cultural.
I mean, they're all different, right? So there is this sensibility that the style really had to be 4%.
Okay.
As I worked with the makers and tasted so many formulas, so many things you could do, grape varieties, how they age it, how they cook it down. The idea with a vinegar is that it's a live product. The acetobacter is a bacteria. You would never want it in your winery because it would ruin.
It's a dirty word in the winery. Bad.
Right? But in a vinegar maker's place, and again, this isn't an Italian product. Italians say this is not Italian. It's Modenese. The regional area of Italy, Modena, just east of the Po River Valley, where they do this, it has to be 6%, or it's not really considered vinegar. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you get around that? What you do is you do a higher percentage of grape must. You make it sweeter. Because, you know, you can, in terms of cost and everything else, think about it. Balsamic vinegar is grape must and vinegar, wine vinegar. If you have something for $3 on the bottom shelf of a grocery store, that's going to be a higher percentage of vinegar and a lower percentage of grape must.
Sure.
And probably grape must that was reduced in some sort of jacketed, covered steam kettle, which does a very rapid, clean reduction, but you lose all of the volatile aromas.
Sure.
So imagine interesting grapes like Sangiovese,
And, my favorite.
I have to sing for this group. And Trebbiano, which is the one that people really know about.
Yeah.
And, oh my goodness, why am I forgetting the other
Lambrusco.
One? It's Lambrusco. Sí.
Certo.
And so this, which is a beautiful, flavorful grape. Those are the three most common ones if you're getting your grapes from Modena. You could be a Modenese vinegar maker and source your grapes from Southern Italy or from Greece or from North. It's how do you manage your costs? If some buyer is forcing you to value engineer, you just get your produce elsewhere.
Ooh, so we start off value with engineer, another buzzword, because that happens with wine too. You talk about the vinegar on the bottom shelf. The wine is on the bottom of the shelf and $4 a bottle for a measurable reason.
For measurable reasons. And so to start off with good grapes, good juice, and then to reduce them over open flame so that the caramelization happens naturally. No caramel coloring is in these because you don't need it. You have, if you do it in a steam jacket thing where there's no flavor, people have to add caramel flavor and caramel color to make up for that. Don't need to do that for this.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
And then after that, then they age it in Slavonian oak.
Okay.
And aging is a couple of years. This isn't 25 years, but it doesn't need to be because what you get is the most outstanding balance of acid and sugar, the complexity, digestive. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and let you taste it, and you tell me.
And while I'm pouring it for our listeners, you are not making these. You are importing these from Modena.
That's right. I'm the negociant.
You're the negociant, yes, which is different than the olive oil. Oh, my God. It looks like I'm pouring the shiniest chocolate syrup.
It's very completely different texture. Look at the legs on it. Give it a little...
Like a wine almost, yeah.
See that?
See, good thing I'm tasting it from a stem. I can swirl and gosh. Oh my God. First of all, totally different smell. Rosato. So this is, I always talk about the balsamic or just really good vinegar is like the epitome of umami that we talk about when you smell the savoriness of it. I get sweetness on the finish.
You would. And
yes.
I will say that even though we stand on being an olive oil company, the biggest emotional impact of closing the business in 2019 was not having the vinegar available. And when I reopened, I had people calling and saying how much they had hoarded and that they were down to their last bottle and nobody in the house knew where it was because it was for them only and just cute things like that. It is being able to offer this very special condiment. The sizes and prices are really very reasonable.
Yeah.
Because I don't have it bottled in Italy in the 100 ml Consorzio bottle authentically, right? To be able to call it true balsamic vinegar, it comes in that little funny round bottle with the square bottom, right?
Yep.
But it's certified by the Consorzio and it's the real thing and it just comes over bulk and we bottle it here. There's something that's this special.
It's really special. I've taken three sips while you were talking. The viscosity, it's like silk across my palate. It's got weight to it, but not overpowering. And again, how many people are going to sit and drink it out of essentially a wine glass, which is what I'm doing.
Well, actually, a lot of people do.
I mean, it's
for some people, it is,
like that.
It is a digestive for them. Over a little bit of cheese. Over a fresh strawberry.
What cheese? Give me a top one or two that you would do it over.
I have to say, a pinnacle of to Parma was, I was there for the food show, and we dined just outside of the trade show venue, and they brought a flight of cheeses, all Parmigiano Reggiano, different ages, and they paired them with balsamic vinegars to match.
Yes.
And at the very end, they had the stuff that was, I think they had an eyedropper. It was so thick on this aged, nutty, amazing. But yeah, people, you know, for a charcuterie board, that you could add to that.
For sure. The more aged it is, the thicker it gets.
That will happen because of the reduction. Yeah. And I think, too, the ratio of grape must. And grape must, for those who might not know who the non-winemakers there, it's the skin, the seeds, the stem, everything goes in when it gets cooked down. It's all crushed together and then strained and then reduced. That grape must has all of that complexity in it. But if you have a higher percentage of grape must, it will be sweeter. And if you look on the back, isn't it 12 grams of sugar per tablespoon?
Yes.
The sweetness and the thick viscosity, it is a 6% acid to hold to the Modenese standard. And I'm very proud of that.
I'm looking at
vinegars across California, and I see 3.5-4%, just very low grams of sugar. And it's not saying that it's bad. Just think of a plain wine vinegar. It's hardly sweet at all, right?
Yeah. That's what's so striking about this for me. I love your descriptors on the back of the bottle. So plummy, honeyed, luscious, and exceptional. That is a description for sure. I agree with all of it. But plummy is a nod to sweetness for sure. And then it says appreciate as a restorative before meal aperitif, an after dinner digestif, or as a special dressing. I would do all three of those things with this. Just drink it like this.
It's amazing. Balsamic butter chicken is, I think, one of the most popular things we do. We did a balsamic butter pork loin once too.
All right, people, go to the website, balsamic butter chicken. Hey, here's my last question. Balsamic. I think I know the answer, but I think a lot of people have never really thought about it. Why is it called balsamic? What's the connection?
It's considered really, well, it was a restorative. How many people listening saw the HBO series Rome? There is an episode. He's racing off to war and he grabs his vinegar bag. What Roman soldiers had as part of their kit was a little bag that had vinegar in it, which they added to the water to make it drinkable.
Ah, okay.
And Julius Caesar had an assistant, and his name was the same word. It was so romantic when I found this out.
Who?
Posca. His manservant was Posca.
Posca.
That drink is called Posca.
Okay.
And people in medieval times or ancient Roman times would have this reduced grape vinegar thing for preservative to help the water be drinkable, considered somewhat medicinal or like a balsamic. So
that's where that term comes from, relating to being like a balm.
That's right.
Okay.
So in Italy, and you see it on my label, aceto means vinegar, balsamic vinegar, aceto balsamico. There it is.
Even that story there is just a reminder of the history of olive oil and the history of vinegar and how they're such historical products, for lack of a better word. But I have to tell you, the current situation, the present of olive oil and vinegar, thanks to you and the work that you're doing, holy cow, I love the present. And I'm so grateful for you for sharing these with me and walking our listeners through why they're so special. And now all they need to do is go to AmericanOliveFarmer.com and use the discount code SIPWITHNIKKI, as always, for these beautiful products and anything else that they see on there. So thank you for continuing to extend that as an official sponsor of Sip with Nikki.
Well,
we thank you.
Nikki, it's my pleasure. And for the listeners who have already shopped with us, I want to remind all of you that there is a rewards program. So you earn $5 for every $50 spent. And so even though the coupon is for the introduction, you continue to save. And you'll save on top, you know, if you bought the trio at a discount and you had some store credit, you could apply that. So we try to make it really easy to enjoy these products. And
thank you for
so happy to be part of that.
Yeah, returning customers, existing customers get a store credit to apply to the next purchase. That's amazing. And a subscription saves on everything.
That's right.
Thank you, my friend. This is always such a pleasure. I'm going to cheers you with my balsamic in my little glass here. Oh, and finish that. Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
I really meant it when I told her, gosh, Liz, I learned so much every time that we have a call together. And today was really no exception. Not only all the fun catchphrases and industry terms from the olive oil and vinegar world that she likes to catch me up on, but just the process that really sets her products apart. I knew they were high-end, custom crafted, small batch, and all the things just like wine that we celebrate. But now I know, and hopefully you do too, the process of how these oils are flavored and how authentic it is. And man, I can't wait to finish recording this outro because I'm dying to go make dinner, make my beautiful salmon with the lemon oil.
followed by popcorn with basil oil and Parmigiano Reggiano. Oh my gosh. As always, thank you, Liz, for your time. I know you're busy walking the olive orchard, so for you to take the time to catch our listeners up on what's new on your website is amazing. So make sure you visit AmericanOliveFarmer.com. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI for $10 off your order. And if you're already a customer, think of subscribing. And don't forget that you also have your store credit from your previous orders that you can apply. I think all of these would be beautiful with a charcuterie board and also on pizza, as you heard me say. And so if you're looking for the perfect wine to pair with those, of course, Solovato, both the Sangiovese and the Fortunato Super Tuscan inspired blend that Michael and I have made here in both Sonoma and Napa. At the time of this recording in June of 2025, we've got both the 2022 Sangiovese and the 2022 blend. Very little bit of that left. Visit our website, solovatowines.com. Remember, Solovato is Italian for joyful and uplifted. And we'll give you 10% off your order when you use the code PODLISTENER. Get the olive oil, get the vinegar, get the wine, feel the joy. You're welcome. And whatever you do between now and next week, I hope that you sip well.